friends. Welcome. It is 4 p.m. Central Time, and you're listening to my voice on the great GCN Radio Network, either through the Internet or through one of our great GCN affiliate stations out there. In either case, that means it's now time for INN World Report Radio. Good afternoon. My name is Tom Kiley. I will be your host for the next 1 hour here on GCN. The INN World Report team is a group of alternative media activists here in New York City, 1 mile north, actually 1.5 mile only, north of Ground Zero, here on the west side of Manhattan. We've been together for about 9 years now. We've produced alternative national television programming, news and information programming, the top-of-the-hour news briefs, like the one that you just heard before this program began, and, of course, INN World Report Radio, our news talk offering here. Welcome to the program, friends. We're going to be talking about nuclear disarmament today, but before our guest joins us to do that, Daryl Kimball will be here in just a few minutes. Let's open up the phone lines right now. First thing, first topic of the show, 866-582-9933. Give me a call. Let me know. Did you hear yesterday's program? It was a fascinating discussion yesterday. I thought we had the famous Canadian peace activist Barry Zwick was on with us, and we were discussing a piece that he had written concerning the peace movement and the 9/11 truth movement, and how the one was not accepting of the other, whereas the 9/11 truth people are consider themselves a peace movement. I thought it was a fascinating discussion, and we were going around and around about this gatekeeper function that seems to be on the traditional left. It's in the alternative media, and it is certainly among many of the icons on the left side of the political spectrum. Very interesting interview. If you didn't catch it, I urge you go to our archives on GCN. You can take a listen to it from yesterday's program. If you just go to the main page on GCN and pick the drop-down for INN World Report, you'll come up on our page there on GCN, and there's a link to the archives, and you can go to yesterday's program, the February 10th. Great, great interview, and I know a lot of people were getting in touch with me. They were very excited about it. So then, what do you think? Let me know if you heard it. 866-582-9933. What do you think? Why do you think there is such a disconnect between the traditional peace movement, the traditional liberal or left-wing alternative media in this country, icons that just seem to shy away from it. They don't want to talk about it. They don't want to deal with it. What's that all about? Barry says he thinks part of it is perhaps, you know, COINTELPRO style divisiveness that has been sown into the peace movement. And for that matter, how effective do you consider the peace movement to be? It's another thing that we touched on in our interview yesterday. There was 1 million people on the streets in London once or twice, I think, before the Iraq War. I know here in New York City, on two occasions, once before the war and I think once right after it had started, we had a massive demonstration, 500,000 people, I would say conservatively estimating 500,000 people, several sources estimating that. The police were using these pen tactics where they would sort of force you down certain streets, and then when you got there, you found out that the end of the street was blocked off with temporary metal barriers, and they would keep people compressed and keep people from being able to move around, which is really silly because it's a peace demonstration, and if they had just left people alone and let them go down the streets, it would have been much better. But it got a little ugly. In any case, the New York Times reported that there were tens of thousands of protesters. Now, that's ridiculous. There was hundreds of thousands of protesters, but the New York Times reported tens of thousands. What's the deal? What's the deal with the peace movement itself? How effective is it? It certainly did not seem to delay or impede the invasions of Afghanistan and Iraq at all. What can the peace movement claim as a success? Maybe that we're not in Iran right now as well. I don't know. It seems to me that maybe it's time for peace activists to go back to the drawing board and, you know, determine how effective the tools that they are using and the methods that they are using are actually being, and whether or not people are more enamored with traditional methods and tools than they are with actually getting the job done. Perhaps it's time to go back to the drawing board. I know that the other side certainly does not rest. Okay, the people who want to make war do not wait around and wait to get smashed over the head by a big, powerful peace movement. No, they work constantly. First of all, they're in a minority. I think that the real warmongers in this country, particularly in the government, or who manipulate the government, I should say, are really not as numerous as the goodwill of the American people. And so by that very nature, they have to be sort of conspiratorial, if you ask me, because they can't come straight out. They can't come straight out and say, we want to invade Iraq, and we're not even going to tell you why. You know, it's either for oil or China containment, you know, which they really don't want to talk about. And so there's all kinds of, you know, as the Project for the New American Century guys put it when at the end of the Clinton presidency, the American people wouldn't want to do all this stuff that we feel is necessary to be done. Short of some sort of catalyzing event like a new Pearl Harbor, the famous quote, like a new Pearl Harbor. And, of course, it shows up, the new Pearl Harbor, right on time, very early in the Bush presidency. So in any case, they're not waiting around. They're engineering all kinds of ways to get us into war, controlling the media, infiltrating groups, putting a drumbeat out, putting a message out. And, you know, we saw, like I said, many demonstrations around the world, not just in these United States. And many polls showing in places like England, a large majority, clear majority of people not be in favor of invading Iraq, for instance. And yet the peace movement was ineffective, it seems, in slowing that down. And I don't see any particular follow-up either. But on the other hand, we have these various icons from the peace movement and from the left that still hold sway. And, I don't know, maybe people need to think about trying to do things a little bit differently. The famous Einstein quote came up yesterday. The definition of insanity being if you're doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result. Anyhow, that's just some thoughts, and maybe that's a good setup for today's guest. We'll be joined shortly by Daryl Kimball, and Daryl is with the Arms Control Association, founded back in 1971, which is a national nonpartisan organization dedicated to promoting public understanding of and support for effective arms control policies. Another angle in the peace effort, I think, is trying to control the rate and flow of arms around the world, and particularly nuclear weapons. And, of course, you know, there's a lot of talk about Iran still in the news now. Friends, I wonder, after all of the negative interaction that the United States has had with the state of Iran, and let's go back to, it goes back to World War II. We had a military over there babysitting the Iranians, making sure that they did not side with the Germans. And then after the Second World War, the British were basically raping the Iranians for their oil. And the Iranians didn't like it. They created a democracy. They forced the king to agree, and they elected a government. And the government said, you know, if you don't renegotiate with us, we're going to nationalize the oil. Well, that caused us to go in there and destroy their democracy. Now, they want to get nuclear weapons. I don't know. What does the country have to do to protect itself? That's the kind of stuff we're going to be talking about with Daryl Kimball on the other side of this break.
America, you are being tested, but here's where we study for it. From 1/2 mile north of Ground Zero in New York City, you are listening to INN World Report Radio with Tom Kiley. Now, daily on GCN, 4 until 5 p.m. Central. Thank you. For 9 years, the alternative media activists at INN have produced national daily television news and information programming, top-of-the-hour radio news briefs, and INN World Report Radio. News talk radio that brings you real news the networks won't tell you, and all of it 100% certified neocon free. To find out more and for details on the stories we are following, go to INNWorldReport.net.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Radio 5 days a week right here on GCN, 4 until 5 p.m. Central Time, where we like to bring you the news the networks won't tell you. And we're going to be talking for the rest of the program with Daryl Kimball about nuclear arms and non-proliferation and so forth. Daryl is the executive director of the Arms Control Association, or of Arms Control Association. I don't know if it's the Daryl, but in any case, an organization that's been around since 1971. That's quite impressive, and dealing with various issues around the proliferation of nuclear weapons around the world. Daryl, welcome to INN World Report.
Thank you.
And you know, it seems to me that this is a this awesome feature has been around. Since the end of the Second World War, fortunately only used twice by the United States against Japan. But it's a strange, peculiar nature to this beast, because it's an extremely awesome, horrible, deadly power, and at the same time it hasn't been used, but it sort of lurks in the background and it ebbs and flows, right? I mean, it changes. Now more and more countries are getting involved. Why don't you bring us up to date from your organization's perspective on the nuclear situation?
Well, I mean, for many years, the nuclear weapons threat was typified by the U.S.-Soviet arms race. Two countries amassed tens of thousands of nuclear weapons. And as they did, the risk of war between the superpowers got higher and higher, and of course there were a couple of occasions in which we almost came to blows, and nuclear war would have been the end, the Cuban Missile Crisis, of course. But today the threat of nuclear weapons is different. It's not, I think, less. It is a different kind of problem. As nuclear technology and the power of the bomb has become greater through the years, more countries have sought nuclear weapons, and today there are 9 countries armed with nuclear weapons, and there's a risk that there could be more countries with nuclear weapons. And we still have dangers from the Cold War days. The United States and Russia still possess between them nearly 20,000 nuclear weapons. This hour, the United States and Russia each deploy over 2,000 nuclear weapons on each side that could be fired within minutes. And the main reason those weapons exist is to deter the use of nuclear weapons by Russia, or Russia's weapons to deter the use of U.S. nuclear weapons. And then there's also the threat that terrorists could acquire nuclear weapons usable material. And the fact that the U.S. and Russia and other countries developed nuclear power industries, developed and produced nuclear weapons material, means that there are vast quantities of poorly secured material that could be lost, stolen, or sold to terrorist organizations and fashioned into a bomb. So the dangers today are different, and the main force for addressing nuclear weapons dangers today remains the United States. What we do has a huge influence, whether it's North Korea, Iran, or dealing with the terrorist threat.
Well, we seem to be a big influence in the world, but not always a positive one when it comes to the desire for countries, I think, to acquire nuclear weapons, right? It seems to be the ultimate deterrent. We did go to the brink on several occasions over Berlin one time almost, and the Cuban Missile Crisis. Shocking to know that there were military, top-ranking military officers in this country that were ready to go because they thought we would win such an exchange and we'd only lose 10 to 20 million people. Unfortunately, President Kennedy and Nikita Khrushchev saw the danger and managed to prevent that.
Exactly.
But, you know, on the other hand, it has been a deterrent. And it seems to me that smaller and, well, not necessarily small countries, but countries certainly that are somewhat smaller than the United States and Russia, it's becoming an appealing alternative to them to finally deter the United States and its proxies and things like that. And I'm thinking about Iran, for instance, which, you know, we destroyed their democracy in 1953. We paid Saddam Hussein to inflict a million casualties on them in the 80s, and you know, then we had some harrowing sanctions and so forth. As horrible as it sounds, is there a rationale for a country like Iran to say, what do we have to do for you people to keep your hands off us, and maybe if the nuclear way to go is the only way, maybe that's what we should do?
Well, I think the power and the salience and the usability of nuclear weapons far outstrips the reality, even during the Cold War years. This was, yes, the ultimate weapon, but it was a suicidal weapon. And for the United States today, there is no threat except for the use of nuclear weapons by another country that nuclear weapons have any use for. There's no conventional threat that we face. There's no chemical or biological threat that warrants the possession of thousands of nuclear weapons. But as you say, for certain countries that feel hemmed in, that feel as though they're under threat, the pursuit of nuclear weapons has some perceived value. I mean, this is most particularly true with North Korea, which is still in a state of war with the United States and South Korea. North Korea has used the pursuit of nuclear weapons to, in its view, increase its profile, to get certain kinds of energy and food aid. But at the same time, that country has expended billions of dollars making plutonium, making nuclear weapons, and starving its people. And I think the same thing is actually true in Iran. If there were an honest conversation in Iran about the utility of possessing nuclear weapons, I think the people of Iran would quickly understand that if Iran acquires nuclear weapons, other countries in the region are going to acquire nuclear weapons.
Well, let's listen.
Would be greater.
Yeah, we're coming up on break, but we're going to be right back talking about this very important topic. Excuse me, I'm Bertar. Our guest is Daryl Kimball, director of Arms Control Association. The Arms Control Association. We'll be back with him just after this. All right, good friends, welcome back. This is Tom Crowley, INN War Report Radio. Monday through Friday right here on GZN, 4 until 5 p.m. Central Time. And a subject that comes up quite a bit and needs to, I believe, is nuclear proliferation. I always have to say that slowly on the radio because it's not an easy thing to say quickly. And to do so, we've asked Daryl Kimball to join us. Daryl is Executive Director of Arms Control Association, formed way back in 1971. And the Arms Control Association provides policymakers and the press with authoritative information, analysis, and commentary on arms control proposals. And I think it's necessary because it's a constantly shifting target. Daryl, we were talking about, you know, relatively smaller countries. I mean, you know, listen, Pakistan's not a small country, but when you know, going from the size and scope of a Russia or a China or the United States, acquiring weapons, is there any, does your organization chart, you know, who has them, who is about to have them, and who wants to have them, something like that?
Well, one of the things that we do is we do report on and keep track of nuclear, chemical, biological weapons around the world, how many bombs, missiles are each country is estimated to have. And we like to focus on providing and presenting arms control solutions to deal with these problems. Arms control is not a be-all and end-all, but one very important way to reduce the risk posed by these weapons is to find ways in which countries can work together to limit the most dangerous kinds of weapons, to reduce their numbers in a verifiable manner. And that is essentially how the United States and Russia reduce the nuclear threat through their long, dark nuclear years.
So we're talking a lot about Iran. How would your organization approach the antagonists to convince Iran that it's not necessary or not wise or, you know, not, how should we say, fruitful for them to pursue a nuclear weapon? Because that seems to be what they're intent on, even, no matter what they say. And it certainly seems to be the big fear for the United States, I think Europe, and certainly Israel.
Well, it should be a concern for the world. And, you know, that's a question that people are trying to answer from the White House on down right now. You know, our view has been that, you know, the best way to persuade Iran to stop pursuing the enrichment of uranium, which is one of the key technologies needed to make the bomb, is to engage in diplomacy to try to strike a deal that leads to essentially the normalization of relations with Iran, the integration of Iran into the global economic system, ending the sanctions that have been going on. The problem, however, is that you know, the Iranian regime itself seems to be split on whether it wants to do this. President Ahmadinejad seems to benefit from the fact that he is defying the international community by continuing forward with uranium enrichment. That gives him some greater political support internally. And then at the same time, the United States and I think the European countries squandered some good opportunities back in 2002, 2003, 2004 when Iran's secret enrichment program was first revealed, and Iran was in a much less advanced position than it is today. Now, the thing we got to remember with Iran, even though it is enriching uranium, and it of course made this announcement that it's enriching uranium to a higher level than before, it is still years away from having a sufficient amount of highly enriched uranium needed for a bomb, having a workable nuclear bomb design, and then having the means to deliver such a weapon across its border on a ballistic missile, for instance. Still, we should be, you know, very concerned about the course that Iran is taking. And I think that where the White House is headed right now is probably the best direction, which is to simultaneously try to continue to engage the government of Iran in a dialogue, but at the same time to put the squeeze on Iran by going to the Security Council, getting approval for tougher, targeted international sanctions on the entities inside of Iran that are most responsible for helping to support and run Iran's nuclear program.
Now, I'm going to play the devil's advocate. I can imagine the Iranians say, well, okay, well, what about Israel then? I mean, how come you're not leaning on Israel the same way that you're leaning on us? Israel won't even acknowledge publicly that it has a nuclear arsenal, although everyone knows they do. And they are, you know, our chief antagonist in the region. They're, you know, they're Iran and Israel clearly are in several proxy kind of wars in the region. If you look at Lebanon and some say even, you know, with the Palestinian conflict, they are harming fellow Islamic peoples in the region. How do you answer that? I mean, does it look like we're being even-handed if we're leaning on Iran to avoid the nuclear club, yet we don't even acknowledge the existence of them with Israel?
Well, I mean, this is something that Iran is going to argue to the best of its ability to try to say that a double standard is being applied. Our right to nuclear energy is being infringed upon by the United States and the other Western powers. You know, that argument will take them just so far, however. You know, even though Israel has nuclear weapons, even though it has acknowledged them, it hasn't signed the Nuclear Nonproliferation Treaty of 1968. Iran has. Iran has, through that treaty, forsworn nuclear weapons. It has agreed to allow the International Atomic Energy Agency to inspect Iran's nuclear facilities to make sure that they're not diverting nuclear material from a civilian program to a military program. So the legal, the international laws that apply here are different. And I think that as time goes on, it becomes more and more obvious to Iran's neighbors that Iran is trying to create a situation in which it has the technical option to build the bomb if it wants to. No one is sure if they've made the actual decision to build a nuclear device, but they are clearly moving in the direction to give them that capability. And that should worry everyone in that region, because there is the risk that there could be a miscalculation the next time that Iran's surrogates are fighting Israeli forces in southern Lebanon or somewhere else, and there could be a conflict between two nuclear-armed countries in the region. And so I still think that diplomacy is the best option. I think the Iranian government right now doesn't quite know how to respond, in part because it's dealing with its own internal struggles that were made obvious with the flawed election last year.
Well, again, I don't hear the same concern. I mean, is it just that we don't we're not afraid of there being some crazy guy on the trigger finger on the Israeli side? It's only on a potential Islamic side, and I know that Pakistan is another country in the region that feels concerned. But those are big questions. Let's get back to them on the other side of the break. We're speaking with Darrell Kimball about nuclear arms proliferation, particularly in the Middle East, where it's very, very hot. We'll be back with him just after this.
America, you are being tested, but here's where we study for it. From 1/2 mile north of Ground Zero in New York City, you are listening to INN World Report Radio with Tom Kiley. Now, daily on GCN, 4 until 5 p.m. Central. For 9 years, the alternative media activists at INN have produced national daily television news and information programming, top-of-the-hour radio news briefs, and INN World Report Radio. News talk radio that brings you real news the networks won't tell you, and all of it 100% certified neocon free. To find out more and for details on the stories we are following, go to innworldreport.net.
America's number one source for independent talk radio for over a decade. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Report Radio, coming down the home stretch on an interesting discussion today about the nuclear arms situation in the world as it continues to expand. And by the way, very interesting, that music at the beginning of the segment is from the 80s when the nuclear freeze movement was on and there was a big concern about nuclear war. And that song is actually about just that, the United States and the Soviet Union having a nuclear exchange. That was a song that was popular in the 80s. One of the reasons why we play it, and it's just fortuitous that we're playing it today. We're speaking with Daryl Kimball, and Daryl is the Executive Director of Arms Control Association. Daryl, I always do this. You know, I have such an interesting conversation with guests like you that I always forget and wait until the last minute, and I'm panicking and the music's playing. Can you please tell our audience right now where they can go to get more information about Arms Control Association?
Sure. Well, there's the World Wide Web and our website, which is www.armscontrol.org, and we also publish a monthly journal called Arms Control Today, which is available online. And so we report on developments on nuclear, chemical, biological, and conventional weapons, and it's all available at our website.
Great. And before we get back into the topic that we were discussing before, which I think is very important, we want to get back to. I'm assuming you're a non-for-profit educational foundation or organization, something like that?
That's right.
And where do you find you get your funding from, the right, the left, the center, individual donations, grants?
Well, we get support from members of the association, subscribers to Arms Control Today. We have grant support from private foundations, many of which you've heard about when you watch public television. So that's where our support comes from. We're a relatively small organization. We've got just 10 staff people, but we're dedicated to just working on these issues in a nonpartisan fashion.
Any crunch as so many non-for-profits are experiencing right now with the economic downturn?
Well, ironically, because nuclear weapons issues, nuclear non-proliferation issues are so much in the news right now, we are experiencing a little boomlet of interest from our members and from the philanthropic foundations. So we're doing quite well at the moment. But it is a tough issue to deal with, and we're just a small organization doing the best we can to provide information and ideas about how to solve these big problems.
Well, I'm glad to hear that you're doing well, because it is tough, I know, for a lot of other nonprofits out there right now. Okay, let's get back to, we were talking about the Middle East and the Iranian drive, for instance, to acquire nuclear weapons, and how could we disarm their drive to armament, nuclear armament?
Well, we were discussing the importance of continuing with diplomacy, perhaps on a dual track with tougher targeted sanctions to try to bring them to the negotiating table. One of the things that's certainly not the right solution is for the United States or for Israel to try to strike Iran's nuclear facilities. That kind of move probably would not knock out their ability to enrich uranium. It would probably lead them to openly pursue nuclear weapons, and it would probably lead the people of Iran to support such an approach. Right now, you know, the people of Iran support Iran's so-called right to pursue peaceful nuclear energy. The government is telling their people that they're not pursuing nuclear weapons, but if they were bombed by an outside country, that could all change. And it would probably only delay the ability of Iran to build a nuclear device by a couple of years. So, and then, of course, there would be the actual conflict and war that would result after such a bombing in a very volatile region. So that's clearly not, you know, the first, second, or third option that should be pursued, nor is simply allowing Iran to gradually get to the point where it can build nuclear weapons. It's a very difficult situation. One of the things we should be doing right now is also to be working harder, the United States, to build support for a nuclear weapons-free zone in the Middle East. This is an idea that's been around for a long time. It's been supported by several of the Arab states, particularly Egypt. Israel and the United States and Iran are on record in support of the idea. The problem is that nothing has been done on this. We do have an opportunity to...
Hold it right there for a second, though. I have a question for you. Israel is in support of this by maintaining their stated ambiguity about their own situation, or fully acknowledging their own situation. Therefore, if they're in support of it, meaning that they're in support of disarming themselves.
Well, you know, the fact that Israel has nuclear weapons is widely known, but they have decided not to acknowledge that they have those nuclear weapons, in part because they fear what would happen if they openly acknowledged. Imagine what the Egyptian president, what the Syrian president would need to do if there was an open acknowledgement. So it is a very weird situation in which, you know, everyone in the world knows that Israel has nuclear weapons, but they're not acknowledging it. What Israel says about a nuclear weapons-free zone in the Middle East is that we will support the pursuit of such an idea. They have preconditions for the realization of a nuclear weapons-free zone. They want Syria and Egypt to get rid of their chemical arms, for instance. So we're a long way from a nuclear weapons-free zone in the region, but it is one way in which the United States can pursue denuclearization in the region in an equitable fashion and escape the accusation that the United States is only trying to deny countries like Iran the possibility of having nuclear weapons while it's ignoring Israel's unacknowledged nuclear weapons program. So it is an approach that I think could be helpful diplomatically for the United States, and in the long run, it is the best solution for non-proliferation in this very difficult region. The other thing the United States needs to be doing also is we need to be taking steps to reduce the number and the role and the salience of nuclear weapons in our own military and foreign policy. And we've got a chance to do that with a new agreement with Russia this year to further reduce our still bloated Cold War nuclear weapons stockpiles. We should be hearing about this new agreement within the month. The United States also has stopped nuclear testing, stopped it back in 1992. We led the way in the negotiation of a comprehensive nuclear test ban treaty, which almost every country in the world has signed and ratified. But we still have not ratified this treaty. It's an irony of history that we are currently one of the countries that is holding up the entry into force of a treaty that would ban nuclear testing that if other countries do it, it will help them perfect new and more advanced types of nuclear weapons. So
do as I say, not as I do.
Exactly. Yeah. And you know, so we need to be taking these steps to reduce the number and the role of nuclear weapons and to prevent the nuclear testing that could help countries advance their nuclear programs. Because, you know, getting back to what we were saying at the beginning, in the 21st century, nuclear weapons aren't good for anything except getting to the hands of terrorists who could then do the worst with those nuclear weapons.
Well, I wish it were only that, but I'm afraid that a lot of these countries, we talked about Iran, and I think there are others out there, they would disagree with you and I and say that it's maybe the final thing we can come up with that'll keep you off our backs. But I guess we'll have to be ingenious and come up with some kind of way for the whole world to climb down from these terrible things. Daryl, I want to thank you for being with us today. We've been speaking, friends, with Daryl Kimball, Executive Director of Arms Control Association. You can go to armscontrol.org to read more about it. Thank you very much, Daryl.